I think you bring up the really good point, and we talked about earlier, that Josh and Amanda really need some counseling from an older, more mature, probably man and woman for both of them, because they may not know these questions. Like, are these realistic questions or not? Like, there are situations for sure where if the guy is has lots of off time, lots of vacation time, and for example, you know, if they're a teacher like I am, uh-huh. and I've got 2.5 months off, and I've got all these, right? Do I just kick back and, hey, I'm home over the summer? Like, there's been times, but I'm like, oh, when we were first married, you know, no kids, no house, you know, just relaxing. But there's, it was valid to say, okay, you have all this time, let's work. And, you know, thankfully she didn't have to say, get out there and get a job, you know. But there are times when it's going to be valid for her to, but the way in which she asks it, right, she wants to be thoughtful about how does she approach, because as Dave was saying, if she approaches it the wrong way, it could be a long time before it becomes a productive.
So it is realistic that Josh has to evaluate his, I'm the provider, is the sock puppet job at the mall
right.
really yeah. working out?
He might need to, yeah, he might need to evaluate. Sure. And so, and that's what I would say too, is that a husband is in a provider, right? They're going to be a lot more receptive to thinking about that if, depending on the way in which the wife comes to him, asking to support, like, how is there something I can do? This is where it feels like we're struggling. Not being as direct to say, you're failing in this sense. Yeah. Yes.
That, hey, you can go and, like, earn extra money. You're really talented at this.
Uh-huh.
And this is what we could use for, like, savings,
uh-huh.
or extra expenses. And I think you could possibly ask both. Like, maybe Amanda could clean a house weekly. That would work
mm-hmm.
into her schedule
mm-hmm.
to make a little extra if she wanted to work, or Josh could do
yeah.
something in his time.
Yeah. It's very much, there's a lot of wisdom in here to where it really depends a lot on what they're wanting, how they're wanting their family to structure, right? If they really want to have her stay home, she has a lot of earning income potential, and that's a sacrifice. And so it's not necessarily a, they must do this. It's like choosing what they want for their life, and then both of them being okay with the cost of having that lifestyle. And if it may be them realizing that, okay, if Amanda's not going to bring home income, or maybe she can find kind of a partial thing that she does, it seems like we're going to need some more income. How are we going to bring that about? And then that's going to put that in their court, saying that either means maybe Josh works more, maybe he could ask for a raise, change a job, or maybe they say we're going to homeschool until here and then we're going to go to public school because we need to go. Right? There's a variety of ways they can address that. But the idea is, as they figure out what their life's going to look like financially, they want to be together, approach the problem together to try and say, we're a team, and I want to support you, I want to lead you, I want to provide for you. And they kind of start with, how can I support you, more than focus on how can you do what I'm needing. So I think that kind of leads into, we have a few thought questions. Well, some of these we've talked about a little bit, some a lot. So I think we talked about a little bit, should a couple have separate bank accounts? And so we talked about oneness, let's just review, right? When you talk about separate versus like joint, right? So in the joint, you have all the income and output, right? You just all see it all in one account, both have access. Separate, you might have, right? You've got his, got hers, right? And then there's money coming in, money coming out of each one. And so there's not really a scriptural answer to that specific question, but are there underlying things that we talked about that you would say either this is our something that we want to avoid, right? Or something that is our goal that would help us make this decision? What do you guys think?
You should avoid your money, my money.
Okay.
should be our money.
So I'm gonna avoid yours and mine, and they should be ours, okay? Why?
I mean, if you don't, then it's, I don't know, there's just lots of problems I can come from. If there's enough in mine, if there's enough in yours, you have more than I do, well, you earn income and I don't, it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
There's just lots of things. I mean, I think, like Charles talked about, Pretzer, he, you know, they have separate bank accounts, but they
mm-hmm.
both have access to them.
Yeah.
I think that's probably okay.
So, you mentioned it, so like, limited access, you might say, or
it's dividing, I think.
Okay, and even I might say limited, like access can be control and even knowledge.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think you avoid secrecy, like both parties can see where the money's being spent.
Right, and so. You can set up a his, hers, you know, account where they both have access. They can both transfer money back and forth. They can see all the transactions. There's no secrecy, that type of thing. So that those are things that we want to avoid. One of you does all ours. Other thoughts? I would say... I would put, you know, one of our main motivations is we're aiming for oneness in a sense, and avoiding, I don't know, separate lives.
Yeah.
And so there can be times where
yeah.
it's like the setup is that way so that I can pursue my interests with my account, and
yeah.
I can pursue my interests with my account, and that allows the couple to never question one another on how they're
yeah.
pursuing their interests, which can, depending on who you talk to, is either a great
mm-hmm.
thing about it or not a great thing about
mm-hmm.
it, right? Some people like that because it avoids conflict, communication, compromise, and so for us, part of oneness is embracing all of those things and saying,
mm-hmm.
everything is ours, so everything I spend and everything I make affects you, and everything you spend and you make, it affects me, and we're all one.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of how you set this up, we kind of want to avoid these things, have that as a goal.
Yeah.
I think with separate accounts, there will be discussion of who pays for what. What your responsibility. And if you have your one account, there's no question. It's just paid, and that's the end of it. And there's no, well, you pay this and
yeah.
I pay that. And
yeah.
if you don't pay your part, okay, like if you have a car payment
mm-hmm.
and I have utilities, if you don't pay your car, pay the car payments, we lose the car.
Uh-huh.
If I don't pay the utilities, they come and shut the utilities
right.
off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you have a joint account, it just
yeah.
it all goes where it goes.
Yeah.
yeah. So here's, I've encountered this situation on multiple occasions. One spouse is a reckless spender.
Oh, we're getting right there. Keep going.
We're getting
Keep
there?
Going. What should a woman do if her husband makes reckless financial decisions? So we're getting warm.
Well,
this is just
so
reckless spender.
Reckless spender. So we'll just do husband and wife.
Uh-huh.
So the husband manages the finances, and he puts a certain allowance in an account that's shared by both of them
uh-huh.
that she has a debit card access
uh-huh.
to. And when the money's gone, the money is
right.
gone. And so she doesn't have access to the other accounts.
Because of a reckless spending
abilities that she has. So I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, what do you guys
Good
think?
Good idea, bad idea.
So what he said, just to repeat, the husband and wife, let's say that the wife is a reckless spender, and maybe we didn't talk about whether she, right? But it seems like they've agreed that they have two accounts. He deposits money in there for her budget, and she spends, but He has access to both, she can see both, but she doesn't have access to take money out when she wants to spend. Uh-oh.
I think it's a lovely creative solution, as long as they're both on board.
Yeah.
As long as
yeah.
they both decided, like, yeah,
yeah,
let's do this. And she's like, I know, I get kind of crazy, let's do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would have more questions
yeah.
if it's, of course, there are lots of
yeah. It reminds me of, it would be similar in my mind to the difference between the husband has lots of accountability software on all the devices, and the wife has some passwords that he doesn't have to make any alterations, and it's something they've talked about and they've agreed upon, versus she installs secret cameras to spy. You know, like, are they together on it, right? Are they aware of it? Is it something they choose together?
So what if they have talked about it, but she's still not, like, on board, but then she's still a reckless spender? Or vice versa.
That's getting real. Yeah,
it's getting real, yeah, because then it's like the money runs out, and then where does she get the money? How does she find ways to spend
well,
it?
Well, you cash out your retirement.
You've been listening to a lot of Dave Ramsey calls.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
but
these
money,
are, yeah,
real
callers.
You have money just sitting there to retirement. Why can't I use it?
I think it's kind of like a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I've seen that specific example,
uh-huh.
Like pretty closely, and so no, but like I think like if they still have the spending habits and they have a certain amount of money and they're still spending it, like you're still doing those bad habits even with just the amount of money you have. Like you're not fixing the problem of bad spending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like if you can trust each other to have the same account and address the problem of bad spending and come to a point where there's no longer bad spending, that would be the goal. I mean, if that takes time and to do this for a while, that's fine. But I think, like, as a long term, if you were to do this in your marriage, I think it'd just be a Band-Aid. Like, it's just like, it's not full trust, it's not full communication. It's just like, well, here's your allowance. Like, you're treating them like a little kid. Just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
I agree. It almost seems like, and I know that there could be conversational things that makes it a little different, but it almost seems like enabling with a parameter,
right,
kind of thing.
Like be reckless, but
continue,
just only
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you can be reckless up to this point.
Yeah.
But we're not going to deal with the real issue here.
Yeah.
So what's at the root of the problem? What's mm-hmm. her issue? Is it ego keeping up with the Joneses? Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the problem?
Yeah.
When she's sad, she goes shopping.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Look what I got.
Does she have family who can't make the ends meet and she can't say no?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think one thing we didn't bring up too is that, like, how do you determine what reckless is? Especially if you have a husband and wife that come from different financial backgrounds.
Uh-huh.
If you have one that came from very low income and one that came from a very affluent family, one thing may seem just perfectly normal. And it may seem really wasteful. Like there's a different mindset based on our income level we grew up in, right? So that might be something where them looking really closely at their income and expenses, they both might have to stretch to figure out, like, who are we as a couple financially? What does our picture look like? It might be different than his parents. It might be different than her parents. It might be more like one or the other. But they might have to say, I know that you grew up doing this, this, and this, but that doesn't look like it's going to work. Or, you know, maybe they can spend more than he realizes, or maybe she needs to spend less in that case. So one thing I want to get at after we get to this next question is, like, there's some differences in the way that, because of the different roles of husband and wife, the way that they can address that. So in this case, we've been talking about how does the husband kind of lead if his wife is the one that's being spending? So what about if you have the woman and her husband is making these reckless financial decisions, investments, like maybe he's trying to do well by them financially, but he's just really poor at it, or he takes large risks. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the two main things where you can imagine he thinks he's making good financial investments, but they're very, very reckless, very risky, and he doesn't know it. Or maybe he's calculated, but thinks the risk and the reward are worth it. What should you say to her? What would you counsel her? Purely hypothetical. Not thinking of anybody investing in their Bitcoin with their retirement.
I mean, assuming that they're believers, I mean, a benefit of this being believers is you have other godly leaders that you can appeal to.
Sure.
So in that case, the woman is really unprotected by her husband, and she's in danger of having her life ruined because of his bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like he's probably not going to be listening to her. But she has someone to appeal to,
uh-huh.
who can actually speak into their lives with a level of authority to protect her and to help her.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I have a family member who, godly guy, has been an elder, works his whole life, went bankrupt twice, and once was with penny stocks. Is that sort of a thing?
Uh-huh.
He was going to make a lot of money fast,
mm-hmm.
and he ruined them financially. So I think you have to bring in somebody else with some level of authority in the guy's life to help him understand what he's doing. And there's also a sense of the guy is thinking, everything's actually mine. When you make those decisions, you're acting like it's all mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the wife's.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, because we're saying that the goal is being ours, is oneness, is
mm-hmm.
unity. And so there's some like deeper issues there that have to be addressed for that marriage to really flourish. And they're gonna need outside help if things that happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with what Josh is saying, but I think after that's, you know, the direction to go, you also just have to let them learn by their mistakes. And you just have to let them suffer the consequences.
You're
without
saying as the
nagging, pestering,
from the perspective of the wife,
yes,
that he should, there's some places in which he has to learn from.
Yeah, he has to feel the pain of his choices.
Just classes, schooling, counseling, financial peace.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the questions is, because I think we're hitting on both parts, is to realize that some of these scenarios, we want to really be careful when we go into them thinking, discerning, is this a mind problem or a heart problem? Because with finances, there are certain things that are just learning, right,
mm-hmm.
educational. This is how this works. This is how debt works. This is how these investments, this is the risk that you take on. So that's one area where if you have a teachable husband and wife that just doesn't understand how money works, that's a separate category, right? Where you would approach it kind of with that. Let's learn. Let's look at how money works.
Sure.
And then heart issue, like a lot of times, is underneath a lot of these things where maybe they do in a sense know, but they're kind of blinded by a desire for one thing or another to get rich quick, like we talked about. It could be kind of an escape, where we spend to escape, to get away from things. So when you're thinking about those issues, right, you want to think about, is this really related to the heart, or is it kind of a head problem, right? Is it mind, or is it like the desires that are going on? And I think the other thing, too, to come back to something we talked about all at the very beginning, when we say what's our goal is that everything is ours and there's a oneness, even more than that, it's our stewardship. And so, like Josh was saying, we still aren't quite there. Even if we get to the place that everything that we bring in is ours, we're still short of the godly view, right? Really, everything that we have has been entrusted to us, and it all belongs to God. And we're supposed to be good stewards of that. So that kind of taking financial risk might be a bringing into the fact that not only does it belong to the wife, that it belongs, this is kind of God's stewardship that he's given us. To. Other thoughts on that? Risky? Almost there. Oh my goodness. What about part C? Is it wrong to enjoy your money? Any verses you can think of? Yes, no? Should we live out the good life? There is a passage there. Let's go to Ecclesiastes. Look at that one first, and you can bring up any other ones if you think of any. So, after Psalms and Proverbs, right? There, 5. So it says 18, but we're at 18 and 19. You got any volunteers? All right, go for it. 18 and 19.
Does that mean edit?
It's you.
Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God.
Yeah, that's great. And I think in just the limited time and some of the counseling experiences I have had with people and thinking about it, there is a sense in which this passage talks about, right, this is God's gift, and it says, like, this is his lot. Like, understanding that, like, we each have a different lot in life, and that understanding that and accepting that is a big part of, like, having that peace of knowing that our lot might be to have a certain income, and it's a different lot than the person next door, like you talked about keeping up with the Joneses. And believing that we all are entitled to, or that God is going to entrust us all with the exact same amount of wealth and prosperity and that type of thing, it's kind of a big thing to avoid, is believing that all of us are equally going to have the exact same lot in life. So kind of what he talks about in Ecclesiastes, he's saying, knowing what, and there's a balance there, you don't want to just say, oh, this is my lot in life. But knowing that there are certain things that we can control, and then there's certain places that God has given us. He's put us in a place. He's put us in a time, born in a certain country, born to certain parents. So there's a certain aspect where you're just recognizing our lot in life and where God might want us to be. Are there any other verses? Anything? Yes.
I just think God invented steak.
Come on. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Preach. Like, it tastes great. I mean, it's just wonderful. Why did he invent steak? It's self-evident.
It's, yeah, it's clear.
Somebody's got to eat it.
Clear, that's right. We went out to eat with my dad yesterday, and we were like, I'll have a hamburger, and Ben's like, I think I'll have a Casey strip. And I'm like, oh, Ben, big taste. And I said, do you know what a Casey strip is? No, but it's Casey, because he's like the Royals. And so he was thinking along those lines. Yeah, expensive, I told him.
I know.
Other thoughts? Enjoying? Flip to Philippians. Go to Philippians. I thought this would be one other text we could look at. Actually read one of these verses in its context versus the way it's often not. Philippians 4. So Paul's wrapping up his letter to the Philippian church. It's been a great, encouraging, positive letter. And so, I'll start in 10. I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound in any and every circumstance. Mm-hmm. I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So, right, it's not about I can win this game. Right, Paul's really talking about, he knows both extremes, right? He knows how to be content in both extremes. And he doesn't say that I'm just going to be in want all the time or in abundance all the time. But we can be content in both need, but we can be content in abundance at times too.
Yeah, I mean, just with the creation mandate and what God, one of the reasons God created the world and us as image bearers was to enjoy it. And so I think we have not only permission, but it's just part of our creation to enjoy mm-hmm. what God has given us. And then we, you know, preface that with 1 Corinthians 10:31, where whatever we do, whether we eat or drink, mm-hmm. we do it for God's glory.
Yeah, was it last week that Brian preached, or 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, and he gave that example about, if your parents give you a gift, you don't say, oh, I don't want to rejoice in this gift, because I really rejoice in you, the gift giver. So I'm not going to open it, I'm not going to play with it, I'm not going to do anything, right? No. If you're given a gift, the gift giver wants you to open that, enjoy it. It's a blessing. It's given for your joy and for your good. So there's definitely a sense in which we should be, right? Right. It's a way of worshiping God, is enjoying all of the gifts that he's given.
It might be good, as a marriage or a couple talk about if they tend towards not enjoying the gifts.
Mm.
Mm.
Some people, like, they can't, with a clean conscience, enjoy anything.
Uh-huh.
or if the tendency is to enjoy actually what doesn't belong to them, which is why they go into debt, mm-hmm. why they're not generous. They actually go beyond what they've been given. And just recognize kind of where you are in that. It is interesting, some people can never enjoy anything. It's
mm-hmm.
like it's guilty to ever enjoy a pleasure. And others, that's all they care about. But in the context of being stewards, like you said, if we're being faithful, we're living within our means, we're working hard, we're being generous, we're giving our first fruits to the Lord,
mm-hmm.
then whatever you have left,
yeah.
like you, that's available for you to enjoy, and that can be a lot or a little, and you need to find enjoyment with wherever that is,
mm-hmm.
but if you're not clear as a couple where you're headed in that, where your tendencies are, you might have a hard time finding peace in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think you kind of hit on too one of the last points too, is that like learning what ways you can enjoy what God's given you, and especially in, like you mentioned, are they giving? So learning where do we want to give? How do we want to give of all that God's given us? Because you can find more and more greater joy as you learn to give to the church, or to give to missionaries, or to give to work that you believe God is at work in doing. And as you give, right, you begin to value that ministry more and more. You begin to be more invested. So what do you guys think? This kind of combines a couple of different situations. This is our last one. What should they do? Let's say a couple is, they're really struggling. They're in a lot of debt. They're seeking to kind of get on the right track. When they look at their income, I'm kind of adding some context. When they look at their income, they're going to meet all their bills, and they have a little bit left over, and they're thinking, well, should we give to the church? Should we pay off our debt, right? Is it either or? Is it okay? Should they kind of suspend their giving? What would you advise someone that's like in this kind of a situation?
I mean, right, the example you just gave is, I would say they're off on the wrong foot, where they're viewing giving as after I've done everything else and whatever.
Okay, kind of coming at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's first fruits.
Yeah.
Not leftover fruits.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else do you guys think? Go for it, Judy.
Considering suspending your giving because you need to pay off your debt,
uh-huh.
I think we should remember the widow and her mite.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
not suspend giving just to pay off your debt.
Mm-hmm.
Because actually what we're giving isn't yours to start with.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been a lot happier since I realized that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of rich people that are very unhappy.
Yeah.
Have lots more money than I have, but they are so much more unhappy. And people that have a lot less than I have
mm-hmm.
that are just very happy. So money does not make you happy.
Yeah.
Your mentality probably won't change once you get money or once you get debt paid off. If you're doing it from like a what's left over
uh-huh.
mentality, when you start making more money or have less debt, that same mentality is going
to
stay. And so, I would say don't stop giving. But that's the same reason we've told college kids to give during college.
Uh-huh.
That'd be a good example of people that have money. At least that's the way it was for me. I don't know about
you. That's a really good point. I think sometimes to realize that oftentimes that when our income changes, it often doesn't change our mentality. That it just increases the size of which
mm-hmm.
or the amount. So if you're giving and you make a lot more money, you're probably going to give a lot more. If you're in debt and you don't ever control that and you increase your income, usually you just increase your debt. You spend more. So that kind of goes back to, yeah, the heart and the head. Like, have your heart in the position where you want to be generous, you want to give. And if you're in that position, it may be a smaller amount while you're paying off the debt, because you're giving to the church and you're paying off the debt. You're giving. And then you get the debt paid off eventually, and then you can give. You can continue giving, but in a larger amount, right, that you're setting your mind up.
Yeah, I think of Proverbs 11:24, one gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give, and only suffers want.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a blessing to giving. It's not as if your accounts just keep going down.
Yeah, it keeps you, go ahead.
There is that weird thing with giving where you don't want to be prosperity,
right,
by any means, but there's reality to just the way the Lord blesses us when we are faithful and trusting in Him.
Yeah.
And I mean, just for experience, a scenario, it just doesn't work. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people, and I think we even tried it for a little while, where it's just like, well, you know, we want to honor the Lord by not being that, you know, kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
And it just doesn't work. I don't know how it pencils out, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, it is mysterious. It is mysterious. You know, you think about how, you know, if God is the one that's allocating these resources for you, and it's more about, and oftentimes, I think we could fall into the trap of thinking that we need to be faithful so that God can get His resources where He wants them to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I don't give, then this ministry's not going to have what God wants it to be. And I think there's an element of truth to that, but really, God can get the resources there through any means, and He's often concerned with both getting the resources there, but also the change that it produces in your heart, the investment in the ministry that needs to take place. And so think about it in the sense that it's for our good, that giving, kind of like oftentimes prayer. If you think about how prayer, God already knows, but He still calls us to pray because He wants us to pursue Him, to have a relationship with Him, to bring our needs to Him. And so that giving, it helps do so many things that are good for our souls, as well as peeling our fingers back from like clinging to these things of this world. It reminds us that this is not ours anyway. We're just stewards of those things. So yeah, I think we would probably advise them that we want to be wise and we want to honor the Lord in both ways. We want to give and we want to pay off our debts and owe no one anything. So, well, conclusion. The love of the money, right? It's the root of many evils, lots of evil, and a lot of marital strife. And when two selfish people share the same bank account or joint accounts, eruptions are bound to happen. And when they realize the money doesn't belong to them, but to God, then there's peace that's possible. And so their goal is to look at their wealth and just say, not my will, but yours be done. So we're coming to it just saying, we want this money, all the money that comes in, to be used for you, for your glory. So that's kind of been our study on money. We have one more marriage topic left. Ooh. Any guesses? I was telling Dave, I was thankful, very thankful for the timing, because my oldest daughter Addison is in college. She's been home for the summer, interacting, sitting next to my wife Carissa, mom and daughter. It's been wonderful bonding. But she's gone back to college just in time. Next topic is marriage and sex. So I will not be teaching on marriage and sex with my daughter and my wife sitting side by side. And I'm thankful for that.
Yes, we'll come for the spectacle.
That's right. So that'll be our next topic, and I'll pray for us today. Father, I give you thanks for just the great joy that we can have to be able to come to you and to be able to see, as we look in your word, to see you reveal your heart, your love, your wisdom for us, to see your plan for marriage and how you've designed it to be a picture of the gospel, of Christ and the church, of love, of submission, of leadership, of sacrifice. And as we study these things, I pray that they would work themselves into our marriages, that our marriages would picture all of the truths of who you are, of your character, of the gospel. I pray that as husbands and wives, we would learn to use our finances in a way that honors you, glorifies you, and serves one another and brings glory to your name. For those who are yet to be married, I pray that this would be a time where they would plan and prepare and be well-trained so that they might love and serve their spouse in the future. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.